2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. It is great to be here with you on this programming today. We've got a great guest, one of the oldest living, longest living fighters against criminal Zionism in the world. He goes back many decades in this battle, worked with Ezra Pound and many others. We've had him on the show before. Of course, his name is Eustace Mullins. Eustace has written books on the Fed, the Federal Reserve. He's written articles and redone research on Zionism and the ADL and criminal control of America for decades. And, of course, he's been persecuted and even prosecuted for his efforts. So it's great to have somebody who's spent so much time working on these facts with me. Eustace, are you here?
I'm right there.
Well, it's great to have you here, Eustace. You know, the effort that you started some decades ago is beginning to show some fruit, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed. Well, actually, it's an effort that Ezra Pound started back in Europe in 1920.
Hmm.
That thing goes back a long way.
What did Ezra actually do in his effort to expose this?
Well, you see, Ezra was part of an artist colony in Paris. And a lot of the young writers and artists got killed in World War I. And Ezra, after the peace was signed, Ezra started thinking, what did these guys die for? And the more he looked into it, the more puzzling it became. In fact, they said a professor asked his class just a few weeks ago, he said, can you name the causes of World War I? And the student replied, he said, you mean there was more than one? They don't know anything about it, and they don't. And World War II is equally cloudy because they started rearming Germany in 1924 so they could have a Second World War.
Well, the fact is, what did Ezra do specifically just to foment information and foment anger toward the Zionists? And what was his initial effort?
His initial effort was that he did research in six languages, which he was fluent in all of them. So he did research in French and German and Italian, and so he got a lot of inside information in little magazines in Europe, which was not available in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So he turned all of that information, 30 years' work, turned it over to me in 1948. And everything I've got come out of that. So
well,
it's
now,
quite a gift.
Yeah, well, that is quite a gift. Now, Ezra's work showed that there was clearly a conspiracy to control Europe and the West by a very small group of Zionists who were bent on repopulating Palestine. Am I correct?
Well, initially they called them international Jewish bankers. They didn't use the word Zionist then, but that was the term that he became famous for, international Jewish bankers. And also Henry Ford was very much onto that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the Ford fortune has been bought up by these people, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, they got Henry Ford to start a Ford Foundation. And they took it over and became the leading communist influence in the United States.
Now, people who start good-intentioned organizations and then turn them over to bad guys, there's some evidence that this has been happening in recent years, isn't there?
Oh, it's happening all the time. The Ford Foundation and many others have been totally taken over and used. They started out as almost completely communist, and then as the United States became more and more communist, they didn't have to be quite as communist as it started out as.
Now, the Institute for Historical Research, what can you tell us about the origins of that and how it has morphed or metamorphosized over time?
Well, that started out as a very good organization, but I never was asked to write for it, and I never had any contact with the people that were running it. But it's drifted from pillar to post here and yon, and I don't know what it's doing now at the present time.
Well, it's been compromised. It's an apologist for Zionist control is what it has ended up.
Oh, yes. Well, they know how to get it. They infiltrate, you know. They get one person in, and pretty soon they're running a whole show.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now, let's get back to a group that has started several organizations that I'd like to talk about here. The gentleman that is now running American Free Press, the owner, Willis Cardo, has he started other organizations in the past?
Well, he started a number of things. He had the Spotlight newspaper, and he had the Institute for Historic Review and Barnes Review. Now, it's a funny thing about I spoke at his Barnes Review meeting in Washington a couple of weeks ago, and the odd thing is I was the only person there who had actually knew Harry Alma Barnes. I used to have lunch with him at the Cosmos Club in Washington, D.C. with George Sylvester Viard. They took his name, but they didn't know anything about him. They say he's a revisionist, but that doesn't really tell you anything. Harry Alma Barnes was interested only in the truth, but now they call that revisionism. I find that you're supposed to revise all the lies and come up with some sort of truthful result.
Well, now, how does this man Cardo involve himself, and why does it seem like the organizations he starts end up in the hands of bad people? This seems to be a pattern here.
Well, there is a pattern. It's been going on for 50 years, and it always happens that way. Now, I don't know exactly how it happens or why it happens, but it does happen.
Yeah. Do you think it's done in spite of him or because of him, in your view?
Well, I think he's among those present. That's what it is.
Ah, so in other words, you're sidestepping that one a little.
Well, I'm sidestepping because I don't know how much he is in control.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people, if they're taken over, they're controlled by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that has always been a deep, dark secret. Who controls what?
Well, I do understand there's been shenanigans from the very start with this gentleman's work. Back in the 60s, that there was some shenanigans in his involvements, wasn't there?
Oh, yes. There's always been a question. You know, people used to come up to me and say, is Willis Cardo for real? Because they couldn't figure out where he's from and where he was going. There's always been this mystery.
Hmm. Well, he's turned himself into quite the figurehead for white supremacist groups in the country. Many of them hold an allegiance to some of his efforts. But we also know that from research that many of these supremacist groups have origins in the Southern Poverty Law and the B'nai B'rith ADL group.
Oh, yeah. Morris Deese is a wonderful front man. He works from behind the scenes. He gets everybody playing to his tune. Morris Deese has been attacking me for years.
Well, now, Morris Deese, it seems like he goes out and tries to foment this Nazi nonsense. And in fact, that Nazi stuff isn't even real. Basically, they need to have an enemy, don't they?
They need to have an enemy that doesn't exist. That's the best kind to have.
Well, that's right. And then they can point to that enemy in the press and say, look, we need protection.
Well, you know, George Bush did that on 9/11, observing 9/11 just a few days ago. He made a public appeal. He said, we are going to have a terrorist attack within a couple of weeks. That was an open signal to the terrorists to attack. They must attack right away. And the reason George Bush did that is because he is going to lose this upcoming election to the Democrats if he doesn't come up with something. So he's got to have a 9/11 in the works, and it's got to come from these so-called terrorists.
Well, what we've discovered, though, Eustace, is that the Democrats are as controlled as the Republicans.
They absolutely are. They're playing the game just the way George Bush is playing it. There's no real opposition party
That's right.
in this country.
Well, we've been a dictatorship for actually generations.
Oh, I know it, because they're after me all the time.
Well, here's the thing, you know. What we know here is that many of the people who are supposedly exposing the truth are actually wolves in sheep's clothing. This is what we've discovered, Eustace.
Oh, yes. Well, it's inevitable. I ran into that 50 years ago, and I've been popping up ever since. See, when I started that door, a lot of patriotic groups in New York and New Jersey and Chicago, and gradually they all got infiltrated and disappeared. And there's practically none today.
Well, this recent thing with Mr. Piper, I wonder if he's kind of going to be taking over after 25 years for Mr. Cardo's efforts over there.
That's what it looks like, because he's younger and he's the right age, and he's got the prospects, and they're promoting him all the time. He's turning out a book a year now. Supposedly about every year comes out with another book.
Well, we've discovered there isn't a whole lot of new information in most of his books. It's just a rehash.
Oh, no, it's all rehash stuff. Now, he did use a page from one of my books. I have a book called A Writ for Martyrs, which exposes the crimes of government officials in the United States against the American people. And that book has been a bestseller for some time. Well, he actually photostated a page from my FBI file where J. Edgar Hoover orders me committed to a mental institution. And at that very time, they were trying very hard in Washington to commit J. Edgar Hoover to a mental institution.
Really?
He was as mad as a hatter.
Well, what I'm trying to get to here, and I don't need you to necessarily agree or not, but I see some, especially in his recent efforts with Wing TV, this guy Piper, I see him making alliances that are very suspicious, including with John Kaminsky, including with a guy named Carl Schwartz, including a guy named John Stadtmiller, and including Wing TV. These people have been on our radar screen for a long time, Eustace, as not being truthful.
Oh, yes. And
well,
they were all at this meeting in Washington.
That's right.
They were all there.
They were there, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they let you speak?
They did let me speak because they had no choice. They finally put me on the program. They don't usually put me on the program. But I had a very illuminating experience during that meeting. They had a Holocaust conference. In the afternoon, there was a panel. And I was asked to sit on the panel next to Cardo. But the Holocaust conference did not. It turned out to be an Israeli propaganda operation. Two Israeli women did all the talking, wouldn't let anybody else talk. And I wanted to, and then they were closing that panel down after a couple hours, and so I tugged Willis's arm, and I said, give me 10 seconds, and I'll tell you what the Holocaust is. And he said, 10 seconds? I said, yes, I can do it in 10 seconds. He said, okay, I'll give it to you. So, after...
Well, I don't want you to share that on this program, and I'll tell you why, Eustace.
Okay.
I live in France.
Oh, I see.
And that happens to be a country that has hate crimes.
Oh, yeah.
And it would endanger me to share.
Oh, yes, I don't want to go any further. Anyway.
It would endanger me to, well, let me explain to the public, if they're going to be hearing this. In America, we can still speak about these issues without fear of reprisals.
Oh, I don't know. I've had reprisals. I was fired from the Library of Congress in 1952 by Senator Herbert Lehman, the head of Lehman Brothers, and the national head of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. And he came after me, and I was kicked right out of the Library of Congress.
Well, for me over here, it's actually a prison cell like Gary Rudolph and the rest.
Oh, yes. Oh, Farrison was supposed to be at this meeting. I don't think he showed up. Is he locked up now?
Who?
Robert Farrison.
The professor?
Yes.
He is actually still in court proceedings here, so this is my point. I have intentionally not investigated anything about the Holocaust. I have not.
Oh, yes.
Because there's plenty of other things I can look into that don't have...
Oh, that's ancient history anyway.
Well, you know, the facts are that they've done enough other crimes that I can look into that I don't know about anything about that. And I've stayed away from it intentionally because of my geographical location. However, there seems to be, in my view, in the United States a very, very fearful effort on their part. They fear what's happening to the information. They think it's getting out of control, don't they?
Oh, yes.
So what do you think these people are willing to do to stop the information from getting out?
Well, they're going after the Internet because the Internet is wide open, and they don't seem to be able to control it. But they got people like Kaminsky on it who are playing both sides and infiltrators. And Kaminsky even sent two Mossad agents down to my house to do away with me.
Now, this is the John Kaminsky.
Yeah, John Kaminsky.
Now, he claims to be this poor guy from Florida with bad teeth and no hot water heater. What is really going on with him?
Oh, I don't know. He's telling me that he's been forced out everywhere and his program has been forced out and so forth, but I have no idea what's really going on there. Because the only source for information about him is what he tells me himself. Nobody else seems to have a line on what he's doing.
Well, he sent some people down to see you from Vermont, did he not?
Well, they rushed in and they had papers giving them my power of attorney. And these people were people I'd never seen before in my life. And I wasn't about to sign my power of attorney over to them.
And so what did they do while they were at your home?
Well, they took me down to the bank and tried to intimidate me into signing this power of attorney. And my own bankers told me I was the oldest depositor. And they sent three people over and they said, if I were you, I would not sign this. So we went back out to the car, and the wife of this Mossad agent started screaming at me that she had never been so abused and humiliated in her life simply because these bank officials advised me not to sign this very dangerous document, which put myself in their hands, and I didn't sign it.
Now, what happened with your belongings at home?
Oh, they were. Well, you see, I had to go to a medical appointment. And while I was at most of the day, they rifled my house.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, and they even grabbed an armful of my books, 10 books. They admitted on the phone that she took. I saw them stealing the books. And the guy she's living with told me that they're going to bring the books back as soon as they read them. And that of course, would be never. Because they'll never set foot in my house again if I can do anything about it.
Well,
I'm even checking with two of my nephews are deputy sheriffs, and I'm checking their record to see if they have sent any warrants against them.
Well, here's the interesting thing. In your visit to Washington, D.C. with the AFP people, the American Free Press, did you have a feeling that you were in good company of researchers, or you felt like you were with people that were not trying to get the truth out?
Well, I was the only person there that did any real research. I've been researching for 60 years, but I was taught how to do that by Ezra Pound, who'd been researching in Europe for 30 years before that. But these people don't seem to have any clue as to how to do research or how to build information.
Do you think they're interested in research, or do you think they're interested in covering up research?
Well, I think they're interested in going through the motions, but not coming up with anything.
Yep. Well, this has been our understanding of this group for a while, and what we found out about Wing TV is basically they search the internet for good writing and good writers, and they steal the information, put it in a book, and sell it.
Oh, I didn't know how they were operating because I was recommended. They were recommended to me by a friend in California, and so I did the show once, and. Oh, he was telling me how wonderful they were and so forth. Well, I did one show with them. I never heard from him again.
Well, I tell you, Eustace, you're better off not hearing from those people.
Oh, yes.
And if they call your home, I would recommend you hang up.
Oh, they haven't called me back at all.
Well, they might. They might. They're working for the bad guys, Eustace.
Oh. Well, this guy was at the meeting in Washington, but he stayed away from me. He avoided me, which is very odd. We had no conversation at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of working the crowd. I was talking to a lot of people I knew and so forth and exchanging pleasantries. But so this guy was, he was dressed all in black and he just flitted around on the edges of the operation.
Yeah.
It was constantly in motion.
Well, what we understood about that whole conference is it was really a nest of disinformation and they were actually probably formulating their next attempt to try to sway people away from the facts.
Well, they were not doing it there because everybody complained. There were Jews everywhere, Hasidic Jews in their black hats walking around everywhere. You felt like you were in the synagogue.
They had Hasidic Jews all over the place.
Oh, yes. And they're very prominent. You can't miss them, you know. You see them, you can't. I'm wondering, is that really a Jew? It can't be anything else.
Well, you know as well as I do, Eustace, not all Jews are involved in these crimes.
Oh, that's true. Now, these supposedly were some of those Jews that are opposed to it, but if they were opposed to it, they didn't say anything about it. And these two Israeli women took over the Holocaust conference. I never got a word in edgewise.
So it was really a sham in your view.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to tell the people there that the Holocaust was part of the Federal Reserve System because where the Bureau of Printing and Engraving in Washington on 14th Street is where they print the currency of the United States. And next door to the Bureau of Printing and Engraving, exactly 8 feet away, they built the Holocaust Museum itself. So it's all the same operation.
Well, you know, the work that we're doing and the things that we're trying to talk about here and the efforts we're trying to make about getting people informed, of course, we run into these people all over the place. They're trying to stop our message.
Oh, yes.
And the people at Republic Broadcasting, by and large, are just disinfo people. I was listening last night to a guy named Robbie Noel on their network, and he was still talking about the 19 hijackers and why do Arabs hate us. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, this guy hasn't even gotten past the Arab stuff. And, you know, these poor Arabs have just been vilified terrible.
Well, they repeated this story all day long on 9/11 the other day. They said, the Arabs hate us because of our lifestyle. Well, I've never met an Arab that hates me, and I don't hate any Arabs.
That's right. It's amazing, isn't it, how they could turn. See, that's the real crime here, is the hatred they're actually fomenting in the world.
Well,
they're creating hatred among generations and among religions and among people, and it actually ends up in death and destruction, does it not?
Well, that's the only way you get wars. You can get wars, so you get people hating each other. That's the whole operation. You put your finger right on it.
Yeah. Well, it makes me sick, Eustace, and I tell you something, you know, whenever we've spoken in the past, you and I have, there's virtually no subject matter that we don't see eye to eye on, and I tell you, it pains me not to see a bigger following here. However, it, you know, compared to what was happening in the 60s and 70s, I guess we're doing pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. There was a dry period back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when I didn't think anything was ever going to happen, but I kept plugging away, and a lot of other people kept fighting, and we've sort of won through, and we're getting more audience all the time.
Well, we've got more collaborators coming on board every day, including, and here's some of the best collaborators we've found, from the Jewish community, because they know all the secrets.
Oh, yes.
And what we've been able to do is because we've got people from the inside starting to talk, we're going to get more truth out because we're finding out that the bad guys are running scared. And as soon as they show their weakness, they're going to lose a lot more of their control.
Oh, they really will. When I first went to New York in 1948, I worked exclusively with Henry Klein and Ben Friedman. And Myron Fagan was the first person, he was a Hollywood screenwriter, he was the first person to publicly endorse my Federal Reserve book.
Mm.
And he had a newsletter and he had radio broadcasts. They're still rebroadcasting Myron Fagan's talks, and the guy's been dead for 20 years.
Well, Myron, when did Ben Friedman die?
Ben died about 20 years ago.
He was a good man, huh?
He was a good, solid man. I worked with him. I used to have breakfast in his apartment on Fifth Avenue every morning. I was staying with Conrad Grebe and Colonel Sanctuary, who were two of the old-timers in this movement. And I was staying with them about two blocks away, and I would go up to Ben's for breakfast every morning.
Well, Ben Friedman has held on our website a spot of honor throughout the whole website's history. We've actually had 65,000 downloads of his speech at the Willard Hotel.
Yeah, his stuff keeps circulating all the time. It's amazing.
Well, just from our site alone, 65,000, Eustace.
That's a great number.
And we've had more than that about the history of the Rothschilds that we put up, over 70,000.
Well, the history of the Rothschilds is the basis of the whole thing.
That's right. They
took over the world at the Congress of Vienna in 1815. That was after they crushed Napoleon. They just took over the whole world after that.
Hmm.
And we're still suffering from it today because it's a very baneful influence.
Yeah, it is. Well, I thought it would be a great idea to have you discuss a little bit about this conference and put it in perspective for the listeners, because you're somebody that, in my view, has a great deal of credibility. And of course, you know, when you make an observation, it's generally in my experience right on the money. So I thought it would be great for the listeners to have a chance to hear what you felt about the conference and how comfortable you felt with the information that was coming out of it.
Well, the information that was coming out of it was so trivial that I wasn't listening to any speakers. So I was out in the center hall talking to some of the guys I knew there. And Willis comes out and he says, we've got very good speakers here. Now get in there and listen to them. And he was practically shoving us back into the hall. Well, he had two small an auditorium, and it was only room for half of the attendees. So what they did, they set up another room, and you sat in that room, and you watched the speakers on the televised radio. And they didn't even have to have it set up for their own speakers.
Well, nothing surprises me here about all this stuff. And, you know, Mr. Piper being in Washington, D.C. for 25 years.
Oh, he's been around a long time.
Yeah, and I don't see anything coming out of this guy that's of consequence. And, in fact, recently he tried to denigrate and destroy the reputation of a man who tried to tell the truth, a guy named Sam Danner. He set him up. See, this guy Piper set him up to be destroyed, and it seemed to work, actually.
My gosh.
Well,
I haven't run into his work, Danner.
Well, he's a guy that was at the Pentagon when the plane hit.
Oh, my gosh.
And he told the story.
I've never seen his name mentioned.
Well, he talked about the fact that it was not a passenger jet, and there was no bodies, and there were no luggage around, and there were, you know, it just didn't make sense what he saw there.
Oh, yes.
And so what happened was immediately he was set up to be destroyed, and Wing TV did it to him, a guy named Pickering, and a guy named Piper. Piper, Pickering, and Wing TV destroyed this man.
My gosh. Well, they've obliterated his name entirely because I've never heard his name in my life.
Well, if you look on the net, and I know you've got the net, to check on Sam Danner, and you'll probably get a lot of their lies, but Sam, Christopher Bolin has looked into it, and Christopher Bolin believes Sam Danner's story.
Oh, yeah.
And so Eric's spoken to him as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, this whole thing is so crazy that they would attack their own headquarters building.
Well, you know, interesting that... They had to say that it was at the heart of the military-industrial complex that they were attacked, which is lies. I mean, they just did it out of that building because they could set up the transponder to bring the plane into.
Oh yeah.
But well, they had radio control vehicles and whatnot and planes and whatnot. I mean, you know, this wasn't a passenger jet that hit that building.
Oh no, certainly not. Well,
but anyway, so this whole thing, you have anything else you'd like to share with my listeners before we call it a day there, Eustace?
Well, I think we've covered the high points, and people have to know where they stand and what they're listening to and why they're being given this stuff. And that's what, of course, when I went up there, I knew exactly what I was going to hear. It was all pre-planned.
Yeah.
Because I've been to their meetings before, and I'll come out exactly the same. And, you know, when Willis agreed to give me 10 seconds to tell him what the Holocaust was about. Then he closed the conference, and the people walked out. And I said, Willis, you were going to let me tell the people what the Holocaust was about. And he said, oh, I forgot all about it.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah, he's in my view, he's got no credibility. He's a bad guy. That's what I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, but he still has Mark Lane around there when they call in his
job. Who is this Mark Lane guy?
He's a Jewish columnist that was the boyfriend of Eleanor Roosevelt for a while. And he writes about it in his own book, which Cardo sells, not Rush to Judgment, but Final Judgment. And so he doesn't try to conceal his record whatsoever.
Yeah. So, and from what I understand, this was the lawyer they wanted to have Bolin use against the police department up in Chicago.
Well, they always use Lane, and he always loses.
Oh, is that a surprise? Surprise, huh?
Yeah. I've been doing my own lawsuits for 50 years, and I certainly wouldn't hire a lawyer that loses every case.
Well, no, especially any bar association lawyer, they're bought and paid for.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to let this beat stand on its own merits, and I want to thank you, Eustace, for coming on today with us to clarify some of these issues. You've been
Yes, I wanted to do that because after all, I was there and I saw what happened, and I've been through it before, and I want people to know what to expect.
Well, they do. Excuse me, they do now. And again, ladies and gentlemen, Eustace, you know, he's been spot on with his work for the last 50 years, and I got to tell you something. You know, we're part of the tradition he set up over his lifetime, and I'm proud to be carrying the banner after him. I really am, Eustace. You've done some great work, and if you go to the French Connections website, IamTheWitness.com, you're going to find out that the work we're doing is right at the front of the tip of the spear, as it were.
Well, that's what Ezra Pound taught me. Absolutely document everything. And I have never been challenged on any statement I put in my book in 60 years.
Well, can't fight the facts, can you?
No, you can't. I went right to the Library of Congress, and I did all my research among official government documents. Of course, the government is not absolutely a thing, but these are all documented back in the 20s and 30s when they were a little more open. And nothing has ever been challenged there. And so I never have to worry, regardless who I'm talking to, I never have to be concerned that some guy is going to stand up and say, well, you're wrong about that. I've never heard that in my life.
Well, you're not going to hear it from me. What you are going to hear is thank you very much, and thanks for spending this time. We will have you on regularly, Eustace, because you're in good health and you've got lots of things to share. And when we have another issue to be clarified or effort to be made, we'll give you a ring. But you know, I call you anyway just to find out how you're doing.
Oh yes, I'm right here.
Well,
I'm not traveling much anymore. I used to travel around all the meetings, but now I just handle it from right here.
Well, be careful about these people like Kaminsky and the rest of them, huh?
Oh, well, they're on my blacklist right now.
Well, you bet. Well, thank you, Eustace, for doing this with us, and I appreciate it very much, and I know the listeners do.
Well, I'm such a glad opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eustace Mullins, a wonderful patriot, honest man, researcher, lifetime effort at trying to expose the crimes of the Zionist world that we live in. Honest man, been to pillar and post, as he says, trying to get the truth out, and actually has run into a lot of liars and a lot of misinformation over time, including the most recent events he witnessed over in Washington, D.C. at the John Stadtmiller / Willis Cardo / Michael Collins Piper. It's funny that using an Irish name in his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that funny? We used to see an Irish name.
Oh, that's quite unusual because
he's not Irish.
He's not. Well, I don't think he is Irish. But Michael Collins was one of the great heroes of the Irish Rebellion.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? You would use a hero's name, right?
Oh yeah. Well, it always helps to have a good. Good introduction.
Thanks again, Eustace, and we'll be talking to you soon, my friend.
Oh, very good.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being part of today's French Connection. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, saying be well. Bye-bye now.